Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Last week, three men were arrested in connection to a New Jersey cross burning. If you've listened to the show for some time, you know that I'm from back east. We were born and raised, my brothers and sister, in northern New Jersey, just about 15 minutes from the George Washington Bridge. And this cross was placed near a black family's home and also was put where it would be visible from a highway. And crimes, all crimes are hate crimes, of course. And so the name hate crime is unfortunate. But the crime of threatening one or more people is a real crime, just like threats of terrorism. Threatened violence by individuals or civilian groups trying to impose their own domestic or foreign policy. That's terrorism. For example, no Jews allowed in East Jerusalem. If individuals or private groups kill people to try to enforce that, or no blacks allowed there in Bass River Township in southern New Jersey, that is a crime in and of itself, that type of crime. And the racism rampant in our world, because people are in rebellion against God, and therefore they express that rebellion in various forms of hatred, including racism. And it's tragic that there has been and there is so much racism among Christians. And then there's also an apathy. There's an apathy among people generally and Christians about the racism that has promoted the abortion industry. For example, this past week, a black church in Denver, Berean Bible Church, with Pastor Ron Fox, screened a public screening of a stunning documentary, Ma'afa 21, and that was produced by Mark Crutcher of Life Dynamics in Denton, Texas. And I am honored to invite Mark Crutcher back on the show. Mark, welcome to Bob Enyart Live.
Thank you, Bob. It's nice to be back with you.
What a powerful documentary. Mark, Ma'afa 21 needs to be seen by every Christian in the country. It is a tool to wake up the sleeping giant of the black church.
Well, we think so. I'll tell you, I've been in the pro-life movement for 30 years, and in that time, I've never seen anything, Bob, that's had the impact that Ma'afa 21 has had, whether I've done it or somebody else has done it. I've just never seen it. It's been unbelievable to watch what's happening.
That's saying a lot, because we all know about, and God bless Lila Rose and Live Action Films for her courageous undercover videos at Planned Parenthood, but I think the creative credit of that type of work goes to Life Dynamics. I remember, in fact, we played some of your unauthorized recordings, if you will, of abortion clinics helping those who would be guilty of statutory rape get away with the crime of raping young girls. We've played some of your audio for our attorney general's office here in Colorado with Colorado Right to Life.
Oh, really?
You guys have led the way, Mark, in so many areas to fight to end abortion. Thank you for all that.
Well, thank you for that. And Lila will be the first to tell you that her, and I'm totally in support of what she's done. Her project was an extension, a continuation of our undercover work exposing the pedophile protection racket that Planned Parenthood and the National Abortion Federation are operating.
Yeah, they really are. And the news just keeps coming out. Even again this week, over 100 counts of a cover-up of statutory rape of a child from one abortionist. That's today at jillstanek.com.
Right.
So this is a great area of opportunity. But then could we focus in? So when you say you haven't seen the kind of results elsewhere that we're getting with Ma'afa 21, Mark, that's encouraging. Not everyone in the audience has seen this. We're going to start urging people to get the DVD Find out about it online at maafa21.com. But what has been happening? Where has this been screened?
Well, the first screening that was done nationally was at the United States Capitol building, the Capitol Visitor Center in Washington, D.C. And then we have had hundreds of screenings, and we're having dozens of screenings right now every day all over the country. And we've had several of them here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area already. There's several more scheduled. There's three this weekend just in the Denton area. So it is taking off all over the country. And the response that we're getting is very heartwarming. And just to give you an example of one practical thing, I had a lady call me a couple of weeks ago, and she was getting some other of our materials. She's a sidewalk counselor in Michigan. And she says she and her husband had been going to the abortion clinic there in her city for 16 years. And she said they've never missed a killing day. It could be, snow could be flying. And she said, we go any day they're killing, we're out there.
Wow.
They're Catholic, and they're praying the rosary and talking to women, trying to talk them out of having abortions on the sidewalk. She said, in those 16 years, we had never had a black person join us. She said, sometimes two or three other people from the diocese will join them, or some people from some local non-Catholic church will join them, but
right.
Usually they're there by themselves.
Right.
But she said, in all those 16 years, we'd never had a black person. And she says, now, every killing day, we're having 5 to 10 black people out there on the streets with us.
Oh, wow.
And it is really revolutionizing, if you will, the pro-life movement. You know, Bob, you and I have talked about this before many times. When I've been on your shows in the past, I've made the point that one of the things that the pro-life movement needs is some replacement troops. We need new people, new blood coming into the thing. And it doesn't need to be just the same tired people that have been doing this for 30, 20, or 30 years.
Yeah.
And now we're getting them. We're getting reinforcements. And I still believe, and we could do a show that would last 3 or 4 hours, I think, on this particular subject, but I'll just say this. I believe that the key to ending abortion in America is in the black community. If they get on board with us in this fight, I think it's over.
In Maafa 21, Mark, you do such a great job of going back to the roots of Planned Parenthood. And I don't think that the name Planned Parenthood appears for the first half hour of the documentary.
No, it's quite a ways in.
Yeah.
Because we want people to understand what the history is. You have to understand the history of the eugenics movement and the history of the American Birth Control League and Planned Parenthood to understand what our eventual conclusion is. And I think we make this point pretty strongly, and that is the motivation behind the legalization of abortion was not women's rights. It was not reproductive choice or freedom or any of that nonsense. It was eugenics. Mm. Abortion was legalized to rid the country of basically black people. They would include some other minorities and what they called unfit people in that group, but primarily it was blacks. And the interesting thing is, right after we released Maafa 21 in 2009, Ruth Bader Ginsburg made a statement to the New York Times. This was just a couple of weeks after we released Maafa, and she was being interviewed by this woman in the New York Times about the future of the Supreme Court and cases that would be coming before this court and so forth. And when they got around to abortion, she expressed some dismay that this was even still a big issue in America. She thought it would have blown over by now. But let me read you a quote from Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Now, understand something. Ruth Bader Ginsburg is, without any question, the most rabidly pro-abortion person that's ever been on the U.S. Supreme Court. Mm. This woman thinks the original Roe versus Wade decision did not go far enough.
Right.
That's how radical this woman is. But let me read this quote to you. Quote, frankly, I had thought at the time that Roe was decided, there was concern about population growth, and particularly growth in populations that we don't want to have too many of, unquote. When I saw that, when
yeah.
I heard that quote, I thought, this is the smoking gun. This is Ruth Bader Ginsburg saying that everything we have claimed in Maafa 21 is absolutely true.
In other words, the populations that we don't want to have too many of are minorities.
Well, you certainly don't think it's rich, white, elitist like her.
No.
And when you start talking to people about this, and you hit the right question, Bob. So when she says that we don't want to have too many of, two things jump to mind. First off, who is that we don't want to have too many of? It's not rich white people. The second thing is, who is we?
Mm.
And who left them in charge?
Right.
And who bestowed upon them the right to determine what kind of people we shouldn't have too many of. Mm. This is, to me, one of the most incredible statements on the life issue that I've ever heard in my life, because it exposes what their mentality is. It exposes everything about these people.
So, Mark Crutcher, in Maafa 21, that's spelled M-A-A-F-A, 21, that is an African word for catastrophe for the 21st century.
Maafa is a term in Afrocentric circles that is generally used to describe the time of African enslavement, the 400 years or so that Africans were taken into slavery. And I just extended it, add 21 to it, because I wanted people to understand that it didn't end 150 years ago. It's still going on now.
It's still going on. And one of the things that's done so well in the video is showing that when there are natural catastrophes around the world, when these occur in black countries or black cities, the aid from America comes with cases by the truckload of condoms and birth control pills. And this happens systematically around the world. And where people are in desperate need of medical care, you find clinics that are stocked to overflowing with birth control, but you can't get basic medicine.
Yeah, we have a man in the documentary that talks about that. Now, he's been in every country in Africa, most of them many times. And this is a tactic that we see consistently with the U.S. government, is that USAID or the State Department, someone goes into one of these countries that's been the victim of a natural disaster, and they say, we won't give you any aid unless you adopt the American system of birth control and abortion. And we don't. And sometimes we even force these countries, like we've done in Central America, force these countries like Guyana, and tell them, if you don't legalize abortion, we won't give you any help. They had an earthquake hit Guyana several years ago, and they were in very dire straits. This was a poor country to start with, and they were in very dire straits. People are dying in the streets, and they need help, and we go in there and insist that before we'll give them any help from the United States, that they must legalize abortion, and they did. Now, in 8 consecutive years prior to that, the legalization of abortion had come up in their government, and it had been rejected, and the people didn't want it. Now, when you study this pattern of behavior, what you see is, this is what we do in non-white countries.
Yeah, we do this in China, too, and the Far East, where we have sent billions and billions of condoms. Imagine, Mark, if we were doing this to England.
There'd be outrage.
Let's say there's an earthquake in London. We're going to airlift condoms and birth control pills, saying there are too many Brits? Of course not.
We never do this in white countries. And let me reverse this for a moment, Bob. Let's just imagine for a minute. We know about China's one-child policy and that they will actually go to someone's house who's had a baby. If it's their second or third baby, they'll take that baby and kill it. We know that for a fact. They're doing it right now. What would be the American response? Let's say we have some sort of natural tragedy here, earthquake, hurricanes, or something, when we need help. And the Chinese come in here and say, okay, we've got lots of money right now. A lot of it came from you. And we're willing to help, but only if you adopt our policies on birth control and abortion.
Yeah, forced abortion, one-child policy.
What would we do?
Yeah, we'd be enraged.
We would be, yes. And yet, if you read, you saw in Maafa 21, Bob, about NSSM 200, the National Security Study Memorandum 200, or is sometimes called the Kissinger Report, which is to this day the official government, U.S. government policy on population control of foreign countries, in which we've stated that our goal was to sterilize one quarter of the world's female population not living in the United States.
Mark, now, I wanted to ask you, from seeing that in the documentary, Kissinger was associated with that. He wasn't the author of that, was he, do you know?
No, he approved the document. He probably had a staffer or someone that worked for him actually write it. But it was a document. It's called the Kissinger document. His name is signed to it. He signed his name to it. I can't tell you that he wrote every word in it, but he certainly approved it, and he signed his name to it, and it is called the Kissinger Doctrine to this day.
These crude and harsh analyses of there are natural resources in African countries. If their populations increase, they're going to use those resources. Abortion is the best tool for controlling populations, and we need to advocate abortion for black African countries.
That's right. And in NSM 200, it clearly states, our population control policies in African countries are driven by the need to reduce the population so they don't use up their own natural resources, which would be a detriment to American commercial and financial interest. So we're going into these countries and saying, okay, you've got chromium. The world's entire, my understanding is, the entire world's known reserves of chromium are in Africa. It's not available from any other country. And we're concerned that these people are going to use up their own natural resources. And so we go in, and that's why we say, if you have this natural disaster or this war or something and you need help, we won't help you unless you adopt our position on birth control and abortion. Mm. And Brian Close, who's in the DVD, he's been to all these countries. He said, you go in there and you see these hospitals that are just literally four walls and a dirt floor and no roof, and they've got nothing. They've got absolutely nothing, and they're needing help. And yet over in the corner are boxes and boxes of condoms and birth control with American flags on them. And that's our response to these things. We would be just mortified and outraged if this were attempted in any of these so-called white countries, or if somebody tried to do it to us here. Mm. Imagine what the outrage would be if some foreign country said, one of our goals is to sterilize one-fourth of the women of childbearing age that live in America. What would we do about that?
Right.
We'd go to war over it.
Well, Mark, then Ma'afa 21 documents in such a powerful way, and by the way, it's not only informative, it is compelling, it is interesting. I watched this with an audience of about 100 people this past weekend. About half of the audience was black, and there wasn't a peep in the room. Kids, teenagers sat spellbound. And the way you document the hatred of blacks in America's eugenics movement, and then the Third Reich and Hitler, the Nazis, looking to America, giving awards to American eugenists for their work here in this country, including forced sterilization, and modeling some of Germany's own efforts after America's, and then Margaret Sanger and so many of her associates and fellow board members and writers for her newsletters, their interaction and support with the Nazis and Hitler's regime, and then all of this becomes Planned Parenthood.
Right.
All they did was change the name.
Right. Yeah, it was the American Birth Control League originally, and they were integral parts of the American eugenics movement. And, you know, the people on what I call the godless left, the pro-aborts, will try to deny that Margaret Sanger was ever a eugenicist, despite the fact that we found documentation. For example, we've got a 1956 book from the American Eugenics Society that lists her as a member.
Of course.
The woman is clearly a member. She even stated it. She tried to join Planned Parenthood. She tried to merge Planned Parenthood and the American Eugenics Society into one organization, and they rejected the idea. And when they rejected it, she said, well, at least let's only have one newsletter. There's no reason for us both to produce magazines. Let's have one magazine, and they still rejected that idea. So Planned Parenthood wasn't even good enough to join up with the eugenics movement.
Mm. Do you remember and I think I have this right, it's a documentary, a history of the abortion industry and the birth control industry that I seem to recall reading in the mid-1980s, late 80s, titled Our Bodies, Our Choice. You recall that?
I remember it, yes.
Yeah, and that was written by, if I have the title right, it was written by a researcher who was pro-abortion.
Right.
And yet she got into the specifics of the eugenics roots of Planned Parenthood. And I recall, I think that's the first time I saw some of the quotes that, you know, I've grown to repeat over the years, but Margaret Sanger describing the waste of money when she says that the blind, the deaf, the dumb, the mute, and the lame are the dead weight of human waste. Now, this is the founder and longtime president of Planned Parenthood calling handicapped people, and she lists them, the blind, the deaf, and so on, the dead weight of human waste. You can see that at Google right. Books. You know, right. You can see the original book in the scans of the pages. And she talks not about abortion, but about infanticide when she says, she writes, the most merciful thing that a large family can do to an infant member is to kill it. And she is honored by Planned Parenthood to this day when they give their highest award, the Margaret Sanger Award, annually.
Right. Last year going to Hillary Clinton, by the way, who stood up there and said how much she admired Margaret Sanger. One of the things, I've been on some of these shows where Planned Parenthood people have called in, and they'll say, well, we'll concede that Margaret Sanger was not someone that should be emulated or someone that should be admired or so forth. And I'll say, well, then why don't you distance yourself from them?
Right.
Why are your biggest center in the country in New York, or one of them, where your headquarters is named after Margaret Sanger? And why is her grandson the guy that's running the thing? And why is your highest award that you give out every year named after Margaret Sanger? Why not just come out here and say, look, this woman was a total disgrace to the human race. We disavow everything she ever stood for, and we're going to go forward from here. But they won't do that because they don't disavow everything she stood for. Margaret Sanger believed is what they believed.
The last time I looked on Planned Parenthood's website for where they list quotes from Margaret Sanger, and they say they're used out of context, and they provide their interpretation, the two I just mentioned, I've never seen them on that list. They're just so blatantly horrific to describe blind people and deaf people as the dead weight of human waste. I checked out both of her books from the Denver Public Library before I ever used those quotes on the air, because it was hard to comprehend that a human being could have written those words, and she did, and they're there.
You know, one of the things we've discovered when we were doing our research is an actual interview with her that's on film. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
No.
It's on our website at prolifeamerica.com.
Mm-hmm.
On the front page, you'll go down to a section called Archives. There's a big box there called Archives. That's archival information. We've got all of Margaret Sanger's books and pamphlets and some letters that she wrote. We also found an interview that she did with Mike Wallace in 1957.
Wow.
And there's really not much outrageous thing she said on this interview.
Mm-hmm.
But her demeanor is one of a bitter, nasty, just a terrible person. You can't watch that and not come out with that view.
Wow.
And although I'm not Catholic, and I know you're not, I can tell you that her anti-Catholic attitude is just palpable in this interview.
Mm.
She hated the Catholic Church. Mm. I don't mean dislike it. She hated it.
Right.
And I suspect that that's not just simply that she hated the Catholic Church. I think she just saw the Catholic Church as, in her mind, the embodiment of all Christianity, and she hated Christianity in general.
Yeah, that's absolutely true from everything I've read about her and from reading her books. Mark Crutcher, we're almost out of time. For people to get the DVD, the best way is to go to maafa21.com?
Yeah, they can go to maafa21.com. That's maafa21.com. Or if they can't remember that, blackgenocide.com. We'll take them to that same website.
Black Genocide, and they could go to our website, kgov.com, for today's show, our interview with Mark Crutcher of Life Dynamics. And, of course, we'll link to Maafa21's website. Mark, could we close with an encouraging word out of Colorado? I don't know if you heard the comparison of the last two elections here, but we did get trounced in the year 2008 with our personhood amendment. We lost by a 3-1 margin.
Right.
And in 2010, that was narrowed to a 2-1 margin. So we still lost, but nationwide, the Republicans came out in droves, but not in Colorado. The Democratic vote was up by 6 points compared to the Republican. So we had an increasingly hostile electorate to work with, and yet we significantly narrowed the gap. And Mark, that was with virtually every pro-life organization opposing personhood in Colorado?
Well, you have to just remember that persistence is what's going to pay off here.
Mm.
And you close the gap a little bit this time, you close the gap a little bit next time, eventually it's going to happen. I'm telling you, the American people's attitude toward abortion is changing radically, and it's changing every day.
Yeah, well, the founder of the National Abortion Federation has written two columns in the Washington Post this month and last month, and she was saying, look, pro-choice is no longer a good marketing word for us to support. Most Americans say they're pro-life. And you know what she said? She said, we need to start supporting late-term abortion regulations and allowing parents to be involved in these decisions, because otherwise we're going to lose Planned Parenthood.
Right.
And so, Mark, that's been an argument we've been making at Colorado Right to Life for a decade, is that the regulations are actually helping the abortion industry look more humane and more reasonable. We need to fight for the right to life and personhood of the unborn child.
Well, absolutely. That must always be our goal. And, you know, one of the things that bothers me, a lot of this polling you see says X number of people identify themselves as pro-life now. What does pro-life mean?
Mm.
I've seen people say, yeah, I'm pro-life. You know, abortion's a horrible thing. I'd never do it. I'd never pay for one.
Right.
But I don't think it ought to be illegal.
Yeah, well, that's absolutely true. But you know what's neat? In the national polls, the biggest shift have been at the extremes, from those who said abortion should always be legal to those who said it should always be illegal, Mark. That's where the significant increase has happened in the last 3 years. So, hey, thanks for your work at Life Dynamics.
Well, thank you, Bob, and thanks for having me on.
What a hero. Mark Crutcher from Texas, Maafa21.com. Please, you got to see the video. You got to show it to your friends. You got to get it to a black pastor. Praise God for Maafa21, and may God bless you.